We are chatting art, transport, communications and history. That's CATCH, I call it a catch cast. In this edition, how is an enamel sign manufactured? Who uses them and where are they made? Today we're thrilled to have been invited to the AJ Wells factory in Newport, where Cedric Wells is taking us on a tour. Thanks for having us, Cedric.
Pleasure, thanks for coming.
Now, before we get started, can you give us a little bit of an outline of what exactly enamel is and why it's so useful for signs in an outdoor environment?
Yeah, so essentially enamel is a surface finish. In its simplest form, it's powdered glass and it's fused to steel at over 800 degrees Celsius. So what it is it's super durable, it's completely weatherproof, any colours won't fade in the sun, so it's UV safe. It's an incredibly old process, but it's incredibly durable. So particularly for fire signage, it's ideal for that environment or anything that is going to be exposed to the elements.
When you say it's an old process, do we know when it dates from?
Well, the earliest examples of it were found in Egyptian times. So it is seriously old, thousands of years old. And it's obviously evolved over the years, but in a sense, it's not really changed that much. So what we do today is it still has those same qualities and the same durability as it had all those many, many years ago.
That is amazing. It goes back right to Egyptian times. I didn't know that.
Yeah, it's an incredibly ancient process, but one that still has relevance today.
And you're going to show us around exactly how that happens in a minute. But I just wondered, how did a factory get established like this on the Isle of Wight?
Well, it's a very interesting, slightly tenuous link to what we do. Our core business is wood-burning stoves, and we established that company back in the 70s. It was my grandfather, my uncle, and my father that set that up. And they started making small wood-burning stoves, and part of the process of those wood-burning stoves was to enamel them because of its durability and because it was heat-proof. At the time, it was a brilliant surface finish to put on the stoves. So we installed an enameling plant in the sort of the late 80s, early 90s. At the same time, there was a recession in the late 80s, and we suddenly found that the stove sales dropped off. But we had these huge furnaces, or we had this huge furnace. It was one furnace at the time. And it was very expensive to run. And we thought, crikey, we need to put something in it. So we scratched around and we tried to find a product that we could enamel. And through a series of quite coincidental sort of meetings, we got some work from London Underground. And they asked us to make some door plates. They were actually no smoking signs because they were putting no smoking signs throughout the underground. At the same time, in 87, there was the tragic King's Cross fire. And many people died. But when they started to do the investigation, one of the things that they found was that a lot of the signage over the years had been replaced with plastics, with powder coat. And one of the big issues within that fire was people couldn't find the way out of the station because the signage had melted or the graphics had burnt off. So after that, they insisted and they stipulated that all signage must be fireproof and it must be produced in enamel. So from then on, we'd entered the market at the right time in that there weren't many enamelling plants left to produce the signage, but we were there in the right place at the right time.
And there were a few other enamellers knocking around. I think I remember the name Garnier's and Burnham's as well. They were knocking around at the same time. How did you manage to get in and sort of do other work when they were more established?
Yeah, there was only a few of us. And yeah, you're quite right. Garnier's went back many, many years and had been a very traditional enameller. I guess because when the plastics industry came in and a lot of signage switched over to the plastics in the sort of the 50s and 60s, a lot of enamellers went out of business. And, you know, if you looked in sort of the 1900s, there were hundreds of enamellers all over the country. But when new technology came in, these enamellers went out of business. There was only probably four or five of us kicking around at that time, and so they needed to re-sign a lot of the underground, and we're in the right place at the right time. They needed all the enamelers on board that they could get, and we were there. And so we very much learnt on the job. They came to us, they said, can you do this? And we were like, yes, we can do that. We had no idea at the time, but we learnt very quickly, and it just grew from there.
Now, you said it was your grandfather, is that right, that established the factory? Was it something that interested you yourself, Cedric, as a kid?
Yes, I grew up in the business. So there was four of us, brothers and my sister, and my dad used to take us into work and we would do various little odd jobs. So I very much grew up in that environment and that sort of engineering, that design environment. Now, I left school at 16 and my dad persuaded me, it was in the early days of the enamelling plant, and he said, look, Sed, you love art. Why don't you come and screen print? We really need a screen printer because we only had one. And so I did an apprenticeship as a screen printer, and my first job was to print no smoking signs. Did some stuff on the Barbican Centre as well, and there was some really interesting jobs. And from that, I just got into the design. I suddenly discovered this love for graphics and for typography, and it grew from there.
Well, that is a subject that we share. I've even written books about typography. What was it that really got you excited about the look of lettering?
The New Johnston typeface, it was probably my first experience of a typeface. And I don't know what it was, but we had a manual to work from. So whenever we were printing, there was lots of rules about the kerning, about the positioning on a sign. And it must have just been something in my mind that just thought, I love this. I love the colours. I love the way that stuff is laid out. And I was quite creative anyway. I was very into art. I think the two married together, and it just became a real fascination for me. And also the process of enamel. Enamel is, I mean, it's such a beautiful, got such depth of colour. It's such a beautiful finish. And, you know, when you screen print onto enamel, you get a slight relief, which you just don't see in other types of signage. And it's those little details that just kind of, I just got it. I loved it.
Well, I'm going to geek out with you for a second about the Johnston typeface, because it was those beautiful classical proportions that Edward Johnston designed in, like the O is a perfect circle and the M is based on a square, that just made me think, this is just so beautiful.
It is. When you look at that font, it's totally unique. I mean, I like the dots, which is a little diamond on top of the eyes, and it's just little details like that. And it's just, you know, sans serif, but it's still beautifully easy to read. It's classic in its look, and you just can't go wrong with it. Having been immersed in it since I was 16, I subsequently went on to art college and did graphic design, but it always remained my favourite typeface.
We're having a little tittle-tattle, aren't we?
We are. I could talk about it forever, but, you know, we've got other things to see.
We have. And we're going to have a close look around the process of the enamelling, because we really want to see that. But I just want to ask you a little bit about your clients. You mentioned the London Underground. Who else do you work for?
There's such a diverse range of clients that we have, but we do a lot of stuff in the transport industry. So we do stuff for the Paris Metro. We've recently done some signage for Long Island, just outside New York, which is really exciting for us because, you know, I think they've seen our work on the Underground. It's so iconic that, you know, we then suddenly become the enamelers of choice. We do above ground railway stations as well. They tend not to specify enamels so much, but we did do a lot on southeastern railways at one point, and we did Southern as well. We do a lot of heritage stations as well, because of course they want to use enamel, they want to use that heritage product.
And with companies like Southern, which are probably not going to be much longer in the world as Great British Railways takes over, I wonder whether there's going to be some exciting future clients there that all need to re-sign with the old double arrow?
There could well be. I mean, we would love it if it was done in enamel. I think some of these corporations, they are moving away from enamel because they need to update signage quite regularly. But the one thing that it does have is its fire retardancy. That's a real key aspect of it. There's HS2 is obviously coming up as well, and we potentially have some work in the bag for that as well. So there are exciting times ahead, and it's good to see that enamel's being kept alive and people recognise its qualities.
And you do make things other than transport signs here, Cedric.
Yes, we do. You know, we have to keep those furnaces filled. So we do a lot of other types of signage for everything from wayfinding to sort of office blocks, that kind of thing. But we also do cladding. And we clad, you know, clad entire buildings, we can clad restaurants, we do bars, we do a lot of work in hospitality and retail. So anything that requires the finish of enamel, we will do. It's become sort of a favourite finish for a lot of architects and designers, particularly in London.
Okay, now I think you've got a bit of an underground surprise for me in the next part.
Okay, Mark, you can open your eyes now.
Oh my lordy, I can't believe this. This is incredible. We are inside what looks like a long curved wall tunnel covered with London Underground signage of all shapes and sizes and colours. Yeah, I think I've just stepped through a door on the Isle of Wight. This is very, very freaky, Cedric.
Yep. Well, we built this tunnel and we call it our very own King's Cross Tunnel, and it's here to display the kind of work that we make.
Now, this must have taken ages to put together, a complete tiled replica of an underground tunnel. How long did it take?
We did it over a period of months, but it probably took 3 or 4 months. Previously, it was just a storage area, and we thought, well, no one else is using it, so we'll nab it.
So it was your idea then?
Sort of, yeah.
Okay, well, let's describe some of the signs that you've got on display here then, please.
Okay, so we've got the full eight types of sign that we make. So we've got kind of the illuminated, we've got the suspended ones, we've got the frieze panels, we've got line diagrams, we've got track plates, and plenty of other types of door plates and signage that you would find typically on a tube station.
Now, this one next to me is huge. How big are some of these things? They can't surely all be made in one go, can they?
No, we're very much dictated by what we can fit into our furnace. So we can fit up to about 3 metres by about 1.5 metres wide. Obviously, again, it's what we can buy sheet-wise in steel. So that generally comes in an 8x4 sheet, but we can technically get slightly larger sheets. But the sign that you see here, we've actually made it in three pieces because there was no way that we could make that in one piece.
Yeah, this one is what, about 2.5-3 metres high?
It is, yeah. And it's a typical track plate. So you would see this on the other side. When you come down onto the platform station, you would see this on the opposite side. Generally, it would be curved as well. It would be curved around the tunnel. And that's part of the reason that we make it in three pieces as well. So we can kind of get, it's a flat plate, we can curve it around the curvature of the underground.
Ah, right. Now, that's covered something I was going to ask you, because that must make installing many things quite difficult in a curved tunnel. How do they get around that then?
So if there's a real curve on the wall or the surface that it's going onto, we make it from a thinner flat plate. It's probably about a 1.2 mil sheet. And that allows us to fix the panel around the curvature without affecting the enamel.
It doesn't bend then? It stays straight, but it kind of fills the curve?
It does bend ever so slightly. If you bend it too much, you could potentially damage the enamel, but you'll get a certain amount of curvature in there. We can, and we have done in the past, put enamel through our rollers, which again gives a bit more of a curve. But obviously you can't screen print onto a curve, so we have to make everything flat and then curve it on site or in the metal workshop.
Because if you curve it after it's been enameled, you risk cracking the enamel, I guess, because it's glass, technically.
You do, exactly. It's the surface finish of being glass, you know, if you try and bend a sheet of glass, it's gonna shatter. Enamel, you have a little bit more give on enamel because it's fused to the steel, which is, there's a bit of flex on that steel.
These signs all look very, very different. So some of them are flat pieces of steel that you've enameled, and some of them are made into kind of box shapes. Do you make all the surrounds here as well?
We do, and that's one thing that we've done over the years. We've bought more and more processes in-house, so we have all the extrusion and we do a lot of the framing. We have a metal workshop where we weld things up, so we get asked to do all sorts of shapes and sizes, which generally we can do.
And we're also surrounded by what you call illuminated signs?
So they tend not to be enamel, though the one that we're looking at now does have an enamel element to it. But that is an acrylic with a vinyl on the back, and then it's LED backlit. So again, we do all that illumination in-house here.
So are London Underground the only clients?
No, we do a few other transport companies, probably most famously the Paris Metro, and we've recently done something in New York for Long Island.
So I'm presuming that all the graphics are different for all these. How do you work out the in-house graphics for each transport company?
Yeah, exactly. So they are different, and what we generally get provided with is a manual that tells us which font to use, gives us direction on all the kerning, on the line spacing, everything like that. So they're very extensive manuals, but we get to grips with them quite quickly.
And logos as well. Some of those must be quite complicated.
Yes, they are. But fortunately, a lot of the transport companies, they take that into account. So there's not too many multiple colours on the logo itself. When you look at a line diagram, obviously, there are lots of colours. And we'll probably see that in the process later. But yeah, each of those colours has to be screen printed on individually with multiple firings.
Now, I know you're going to show us a bit about the colours in a bit, but also, knowing the Paris Metro map, they have some quite strange colours for their lines, don't they? There's many pastel colours. That must have involved you guys having to make up loads of new colours for them?
Exactly. Yeah, it was quite a challenge. And it took us many years for RATP, who run the Paris Metro, to actually trust us to make the signs. They were very loyal to the French enamelers, but obviously they did need to outsource some of the work. And we have picked up a bit of that. But it was a long process. And it was a lot of colour mixing and a lot of experimenting.
So what happens here then?
So we've come up into the screen printing rooms. So this is where the graphics are applied. We use a ceramic ink, which again is basically a powdered glass that we screen through these big screens onto the panels, and then they're fired in the furnaces at about 800 degrees Celsius.
Now this is a very large piece of kit. This is big enough to hold a sign which is what dimensions?
I mean, this would hold up to around about 3 metres long. So we use this particular bed for quite often printing the line colours that you see at the top of each underground sign. So, you know, if you're on the Northern Line, you'll see a big black strip along the top of every sign on the track. And so we need that length to be able to pull it in one hit to get the consistency.
Don't you need rather large, long arms to be able to do that?
Yeah, I mean, long arms definitely help, but as you can see here, we have a pulley system here which allows you to get even pressure, and you pull that across with the squeegee fixed into it. You pull that across and that will give you a really even coverage. So even people with short arms can do it, to be honest.
I might get away with it then. We've just gone down some stairs and come across an absolutely beautiful underground sign. It feels kind of incongruous to be in the middle of Newport and see all this stuff, but here it is on the wall, the original Johnston lettering with the chevrons above and below. What did you make this sign for, Cedric?
This was actually made for London Transport Museum, and they wanted to display some heritage signage, and this one is possibly the most beautiful example of heritage signage. I can see why you get excited about it. It's beautiful.
Where have we come to now, Cedric?
So we're in the furnace area now. This is where we fire all of the panels. Kev is just lifting up the door on the furnace. You can feel that wave of heat probably. That's 800 degrees Celsius pouring out. And those door plates, they are London Underground door plates. He's wheeling them in from a distance because it's so hot. And they'll go in for about 7 or 8 minutes, and then they'll come out beautifully glossy in that beautiful vitreous enamel finish.
Shove them onto regular 9 and out come your nice cream cakes afterwards.
Exactly. It's just like baking a cake, almost.
And you say the temperature's 800 degrees. How do we imagine what that's like? It's literally like a domestic oven.
It's going to be double or even triple that. It's super hot. I mean, you can see Kev there. He's behind this huge contraption. This is basically a forklift that puts the panels in. He won't be able to get any closer than that. If you get within about 2 metres, it's just too hot to stand next to it.
Yeah, we can feel the heat from here, and we're more like 8 metres away.
We are, indeed. And that's why Kev wears shorts all year round.
Not just for a fashion consciousness.
Not at all.
And when the stuff comes out, I can see Kev picking ready cooked things off of some panels. How long do they take to cool down?
Around about 20 minutes. They'll be warm, but you'll be able to handle them. He is wearing gloves there as well. You know, he's handling those day in, day out, so he doesn't want his hands to get too warm.
And again, a bit stronger than our domestic oven gloves.
Absolutely, yeah. These are toweling. They're very thick, so they're soft. They don't damage the enamel when he picks it up. And actually, they have a slight cleaning property in it as well, so it would take any grease off as well.
Now, a lot of the signs are many different colours on one piece of metal. How do you do the different colours?
So each of those colours is screen printed onto the panel. That is why it's quite labour intensive, because they have to make ready the screen and print each individual colour. Quite often you can get away with firing 2 or 3 colours together, but sometimes if the colours are adjacent to each other or touching each other, that panel will have to be fired first. It will come out the furnace, cooled, and then reprinted with the second colour. So some of these, particularly things like the line diagrams, they can have up to sort of 8 or 9 firings. So it's quite a primitive process, but when you see the end result, I mean, I'm sure you'll agree, they look absolutely beautiful.
Hang on, let's just get this right. So you have to put them in the oven, cook the first colour, take it out, wait for it to cool, print again, put it back in, out, shake it all about. I mean, this must take hours to do one very coloured sign.
It can, yeah. And certainly with the line diagrams, they can take 1 or 2 days to produce. Obviously, a lot of the signage is just one colour, so a lot of the door plates you see will just be in that beautiful, rich Piccadilly blue. And so that is just one pass and fired. But, yeah, some of these more colourful signs, there is a huge amount of work that goes into them. And, you know, when you're on the underground, you don't really appreciate it. But next time you travel down on the tube, look at those signs. They are a work of art, and that many, many hours has gone into each one.
Now let's step away from the noisy Kiln area into another area. Okay, we've just come into another room here, which looks very different.
Yes, so this is the artworking department. So this is where we produce all of the artwork for the signage. And Paul here, he will lay everything out, he will position everything and fill in all these sheets to make sure that all the colours are correct and all of the layouts are to standard.
So what have we got in front of us here, Cedric? This one looks very colourful.
Yeah, so this is the new Overground. So as many of you remember, last year Overground had to rebrand because there were so many more stations appearing and it was becoming a bit more confusing. So they split Overground into six new lines, which they rolled out in September, and we had to produce many of the signs for many of the stations.
Talk us through the colours, because all of these newly named lines, and I think there's Liberty, Lioness, Mildmay, Suffragette, Weaver and Windrush, they all have their own colours. How difficult was that for you guys to render in enamel?
There was a lot of consultation, because obviously they're sort of running out of colours in many ways, because we're a little bit limited in what colours we can produce. There's certain colours we cannot produce, so very bright pinks or very sort of fluorescent colours we cannot get anywhere near because of the processes involved. So what they had to do is they had to make slight tweaks to existing colours, and as you'll see, they did a twin line rather than a solid line. They did a twin line in those colours.
So yeah, the colours they've chosen are slightly different from the traditional underground colours, but again, as you said, they're encased lines. Take for example the Suffragette line. That's a sort of a green, isn't it, but not the same?
Yeah, it's very similar to the District line green, but what we did is it's ever so slightly more pale and it's got a slight tinge of blue in it as well. So those little nuances that we had to create in the colours, we went along with what they were proposing, but we were quite involved in saying what could and couldn't be done.
Okay, so really what's being said here is that when they chose the new colours for the Overground lines, they had to consult with AJ Wells and others about what would work best in the process.
Yeah, they did, because as I say, there's certain colours we just cannot produce in enamel, and yet they had to come up with something new and something unique and something distinctive.
So the Isle of Wight has chosen the colours for London.
In some ways, yes.
In a roundabout way.
Yes.
So I guess that the renaming of the Overground lines actually helped provide quite a lot of work for you then.
It did, yeah, because it was a lot of re-signing to do. We had a very short window in which to do it. We had sort of 3 or 4 months to produce a new signage, and obviously they wanted to unveil it all in one go. So what we actually had to do, we produced the signage, we then printed out a big sticky vinyl to put over the new signage, and then the signs were installed, and then over the course of a weekend they were then peeled off, so that suddenly the great reveal of the new Overground lines appeared.
So they all went up secretly, covered in a piece of vinyl, so people didn't know they were underneath.
If you were very eagle-eyed, you could see the slight relief underneath. But yeah, exactly. A lot of people just didn't even know that they were there.
Wow. Now, we mentioned earlier on some other potential work for you guys, and Great British Railways might lead to that. Future's bright. Are there lots of new contracts on the way?
There's always new stuff, potentially, in the bag. Obviously, HS2 is happening. I mean, that is a long way off, but we are in talks with them on certain projects. And then you never quite know what is around the corner in terms of signage, because enamel goes through trends where people, they recognise the longevity of it and then they suddenly want it. So, you know, let's hope.
While we were walking through just now, you were talking about what you had to do for a royal event.
Yes, so we produce a lot of the street signage for the City of Westminster. So those classic street signs that you see when you're in London are made in enamel by us. And when Wills and Kate got married back in 2012, and the royal entourage and the car drove around the streets of London, we had to produce new signage for all of the streets that were going to be on show, because obviously this was going to be broadcast to the world. Millions of people watched it, so they wanted to showcase the very best of London. So we had quite a job on our hands producing hundreds of street signs.
Wow. They, everywhere the royals go, it smells of fresh paint.
It does, or fresh enamel, as we should say.
This has been a fascinating factory fact-finding. Who knew that the Isle of Wight produced so much material for the London Underground and many other organisations around the world? Many thanks to Cedric Wells for showing us around his family business of AJ Wells.
Thanks very much for having us, Mark. It's been a pleasure.
And I hope you enjoyed listening as much as I've enjoyed exploring. Next week's Catchcast is not to be missed.